Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie, and this is The Reason Podcast. Please subscribe to us at iTunes and rate and review us while you're there. This is also the week that Reason has an annual webathon where we ask people who like what we're doing to help support us with fully tax-deductible donations. If you like Reason Magazine, if you like Reason.com, if you like Reason TV, or if you like this, The Reason Podcast, please go to Reason.com/donate and make a fully tax-deductible donation at whatever level you can afford. Today, we're talking with the people behind Mostly Weekly, a web series at Reason TV, Andrew Heaton and Sarah Rose Siskind. Sarah, Andrew, thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Glad to be here. Thank you. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about Mostly Weekly, which comes out about two or three times a month at Reason TV. You guys have been picking up more and more views. Andrew, could you start off, describe Mostly Weekly? What is it, and what do you hope to accomplish with it?
Well, I think it's sort of a Last Week Tonight with John Oliver type show where we're doing political satire, but we're doing it from a free market perspective. We're doing it from a libertarian perspective, which is a niche that Sarah Rose and I both, I'll call you Sarah Rose for the whole interview, Sarah.
I do feel like when you call me Sarah Rose, I have to respond in a Southern accent, just so you know.
That's fine. I'm trying to goad you into it. When we got started, we began the web series before working with Reason. We saw a fairly large gap in the political satire that was available to people. When you look at the different shows that are there, and there's a lot of good content that comes out of them, they're nonetheless coming from a very specific progressive Democrat perspective. And we looked at that and went, well, it's, you know, there's a large portion of thoughts that are not being catered to, and perspectives that aren't being catered to. So we started doing Mostly Weekly, which we've been doing for, I think, about 2 years now, Sarah, is that right? Year and a half?
Yeah, we've been doing it. Our first episode was from April 2016. So, yeah, we're about like a little more than a year and a half.
So we're total veterans now.
We've been going. I think we've done everything. We should probably just quit.
Yeah, now this is, you know, the third season is when any show starts going downhill. What was the, Sarah, what was the first episode that you guys did? Do you remember?
We did it. Yeah, oh, of course, vividly. We did an episode called WTF Our Superdelegates, which I don't know the audience for your podcast, whether I can explain what that acronym means.
Yeah, so it's What the Fuck Are Superdelegates,
That's what that means?
Yeah. I convinced Heaton it was...
By the way, you don't want to know, when you see those ads for W.B. Mason office supplies and they say, who but Mason? That's what it's, that's a lie too. Oh, but let's not even get into that. You were explaining what superdelegates were.
I'm just about to say that in the early days, we were collaborating with a network called Bold. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was a very uncertain start. It was a very... inauspicious beginning for Mostly Weekly. We were working out of a public workspace in Midtown where, by the way, we didn't
have a place. So, in other words, you were homeless, what you're saying, and that you were working between Elmo and Batman from...
Right. We like to view it as we were rogues who were playing by our own rules and then breaking them.
Yeah, you...
The punk beginnings. There literally were people like around us kind of implying, could you keep it down while we're filming this? And so we're filming this. And also, our director, we found out midway through the shoot, was provided through Craigslist. We did not realize that the network we were working with didn't have a director.
I thought that you were going to say that they were a super delegate, and then they changed it all. What is the libertarian? So you started off inauspiciously. Bold is a network that's still around and is doing pretty well.
They have really good production quality now, but I think we were getting in with them very early, and it's so, Sarah. I was going through the videos the other day. That first one, the superdelegates one. I look like a ghost who is on a VHS tape. The production quality since we've come over to Reason is just astronomical.
Well, here, before we get to lauding the incredible production standards at Reason. Yeah, I mean you're talking to about an organization that actually put out 3D videos online that you could actually watch with 3D glasses. We know a little bit what we're doing. We're trying to break into smell-o-vision. That's obviously next for us, but. What is the libertarian take on superdelegates?
So the take was pretty much they seem unnecessary. It was a very ridiculous system from our perspective. It's, by the way, only in the Democratic primary. And at one right. point, this was, I think, Heaton, you wrote this first script, or maybe we wrote it together. But regardless, you had this fantastic joke where we were explaining superdelegates and delegates, and then we started explaining quantum delegates.
Yep. I'm like, a big fan of quantum humor.
Yeah.
It's a delegate who both simultaneously exists and does not exist.
Right.
Or doesn't exist till you observe them.
Kind of fascinating. Reason did some stuff on superdelegates as well, because it, particularly with the Bernie Sanders insurgency in 2016, people came back to wondering what the hell was going on. How could Hillary Clinton always be winning despite losing various primaries? And it was a system put in place after the kind of debacle of George McGovern and then also Jimmy Carter being an outsider and winning. It's a fascinating topic to talk about, because it's, and I guess it's not really libertarian per se, but it's worth understanding and explaining, where these rules that we live by come from. What is the, I guess let me ask you before we talk about some specific, I want to get to your favorite episodes. And these are, 3 to 10 minute video shorts where Andrew is the host and he's presenting information. I mean, what I like about the Mostly Weekly episodes are the, when they're funny, of course, but they're also info rich and covering all sorts of topics. But how do you guys, you said there's a gap in the humor. And it's true when you look at, things coming out of The Daily Show in particular, and that includes people like Stephen Colbert and Samantha Bee and John Oliver, as Andrew mentioned earlier, they're all coming from the same general viewpoint, which tends to be a kind of centrist, liberal, or maybe a little bit more progressive. But isn't politics, kind of political correctness, the death of humor and of comedy? And doesn't that, I mean, how do you deal with the idea that, okay, well, you've got to be funny, but you've also got to be libertarian? Isn't that, is that difficult to deal with?
I'll start off just by saying I don't think they're always at odds with each other. Like, we just did an episode that I was nervous about called Legalized Medically Assisted Sex. And I was nervous about running into a bunch of different hurdles with this one because it's a relatively controversial topic. I thought we'd get called out by.
So what is medically medically assisted sex? Because I want to find out if my insurance company covers that.
I bet. Yeah. Medically assisted sex is a career field where women are essentially sex workers, but they are trained specifically for a disabled clientele, physically disabled, muscular dystrophy, mental disability, that kind of stuff. And usually these people have very restricted access to people outside caretakers and family. And so it's a very different type of sex work than we're used to talking about.
Although it does involve a lot of nurses' costumes, I'm guessing.
Yes, and it does involve
candy stripers, stethoscopes, calipers.
Yeah. And a lot of talk about consent and a lot of educational approaches.
A huge amount of paperwork and lab tests. Okay, yeah.
But it's very sexily done, I would imagine. I can only imagine. So this one was an issue where I was worried about political correctness, but I actually showed it to a friend of mine who is disabled. And he was laughing. He thought it was hilarious.
It was a well-done episode. And you did a good job. Sarah wrote that episode. And you did a good job of making sure that the humor was not at the expense of anybody that was disabled. That if we were taking a shot, it was at me. Otherwise, it was.
By the way,
Andrew, I think it's a real sign of progress that you no longer consider yourself disabled. So,
thank you. I am up for anything.
I guess what I'm asking though is that because I'm a big fan of the argument ad Hitlerum, you guys are both and I want to talk about your backgrounds and how you came to a mix of politically, active comedy, because you started out more in the comedian space. But you know, if you like, okay, you know, this, you can see a stand-up comic in, I don't know, you know, 1940 Berlin. And it's like, you know, Fritz, you are killing out there, but you really have to make it more Nazi friendly. I mean, like, how do you, Andrew, make sure that you're not just kind of doing the worst kind of propaganda?
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple of things. First of all, I don't think political correctness is super helpful to comedy. Although I think there's sort of a comedian ethics that we have in terms of who are we making fun of and that kind of thing. Where's the humor being derived from? Which, to a great extent, avoids that minefield. In terms of balancing libertarianism and humor, I think the balance that's changed a little bit since we've come to reason is not so much in altering the perspective of the show, but rather the amount of substance we put into it.
Absolutely.
So when we were pre-reason, we were much more apt to do a random episode that was, you know, 90% jokes and 10% information, like we did
and
one
facts
on
facts and quotations.
And facts and quotations. Yeah, we did like there were, and they were fun. We did a couple of them that were really great. Like we did one on the Olympics that was a lot of fun to make. It didn't have a particularly political angle to it. It was just in the news. Since we've come over to Reason, we're working on content that we still want to be engaging. We still want it right. to be funny, but it has more facts to it and it has more
right.
meat to it. And
with
so,
hard-hitting political topics like the government hates boobs.
Right. Yes. Which, well, but like that too, though, I think that was a really good example to get back to Nick's question of kind of the libertarian perspective on it. Of transcending political labels. I had a lot of people reach out to me in New York that are very left-wing Democrats that are part of the comedy community here where Sarah and I live that watched it and thought it was great. I had a friend of mine that is very much a progressive Democrat, you know, posted on Facebook and recommend watching the show and all that kind of thing.
And the war on boobs or the government hates boobs is about, if I'm recalling correctly, that was about how breast milk is actually a commodity that a lot of people need if mothers can't produce breast milk and they don't want to use formula, but it's not really available for sale and resale. So that you get into questions of kind of regulation and occupational licensing and safety and all of that in a way that lends itself to, I mean, it's a libertarian topic and it lends itself to comedy.
Well, to give a brief intro, is just you can donate your milk, but you can't legally sell it. And so it artificially restricts the supply and endangers some babies whose mothers can't produce milk. Also, we get to
market.
Talk about boobs.
Yeah, some of our favorite things, well, free markets and breasts.
And yeah, it's great because in subsequent episodes where I have been accused of writing episodes simply on the excuse of slapping Heaton. Mm-hmm. In this episode, he shoots me in the chest and rips open my shirt.
Okay,
so watch it now.
So that buys you, you know, almost a year's worth of slaps then, I suppose.
Yeah, pretty
yes,
much.
Yes, I guess that's right. Yeah, that's
so,
right.
Well, let's talk about some of your favorite episodes and, you know, whether it's pre-reason or post. And you mentioned a couple, but the most viewed episode that you guys have done. Period. And again, the Mostly Weekly gets shown at Reason.com. It's on our YouTube page, and it's also at Reason Magazine's Facebook page. You can look it up all over the place. But was an episode where you guys read, and I should point out that Andrew is the on-camera kind of the anchor. He's the John Oliver of this with slightly less of a speech impediment than John Oliver has. And fewer glasses, but that, and Sarah is the head writer of the program. But it's the one where you guys read Hillary Clinton's book, What Happened, so that the rest of us didn't. And that has hundreds of thousands of views on YouTube and many, many more on Facebook. Why do you think that was, such a popular, episode?
Well, the truth is that, you know, hating on Hillary gathers a lot of views, and she was back in the press because of her book. I think that after Trump won, a lot of people on the right were actually quite disappointed that they couldn't hate her for longer, and so we gave them an excuse.
As well, did she.
The book is pretty terrible, right? I mean, in the sense of it, I mean, it continued a sense among a lot of people, including even, you know, Democrats like Donna Brazile, who has a lot of harsh words for Hillary Clinton's campaign, the former head of the Democratic National Committee. in a recent book, trashed Hillary's campaign, but she didn't take any real responsibility for her role in, you know, missing a layup, essentially, in losing this election.
Oh, yeah. And there was lots of stuff we didn't even have time to include that was just either slightly off or just hilariously phrased. My favorite part by far is that she didn't understand the moral of 1984.
And oh, yeah. That one was great. It was trust your leaders.
Right. Yeah.
That's like, what Orwell's essential message in 1984 is, that we need to give more blind faith to authority.
Right. Yeah. Just like he was also advocating for a different take on mathematics, where 2 + 2 actually equals 5. Right. Yeah. I think we all know this.
Yeah. He at Animal Farm, of course, is a, you know, we should really just turn everything over to pigs, right?
Yeah. It's an animal rights book.
Andrew, what is your, you know, what are one or two of your favorite episodes that you've done, and why?
We did an early one, pre-reason, on occupational licensing that I really like, because it's just that's something that really, really, really irritates me. For example, you in a lot of states, you need to have a license to be a mortician. And what the worst case scenario is that the mortician fucks up and brings you back to life. So like, well done if you can do that. So I like that one. And I also think that's one where that's an issue that doesn't need to be partisan. There's no reason that should be in the Democratic or Republican camp. And that's one that I wanted to get out. So I particularly like that. We did one recently on minimum wage, where I played me and a robot, which I guess Sarah, I am now a robot in all the episodes, right? Since clean-shaven me is a robot.
Continuity wise, you're right. You are now officially a robot.
Yeah, it's robot Heaton killed bearded Heaton. Yeah, that was fun. I also really enjoyed the sports one we did, where
it was
about the boondoggle of funding stadiums and a few other things that happened that I thought was a really great episode and a very funny episode.
Yeah, and these are the topics that you mentioned there. Certainly, occupational licensing and the sports stadiums and actually to a certain degree the minimum wage, I suppose, because you were, if I'm remembering correctly, you were talking about how raising the minimum wage leads to automation, which actually leads to a lower demand for low-skilled workers. But these all have, for the most part, or at least two of those three, cross almost all ideological lines. Because it's amazing, isn't it, that something like occupational licensing, you know, it doesn't benefit society at large for the most part. And I know you mentioned morticians. I always think about barber colleges and hairstylists, where they, you know, people in virtually every state have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars and thousands of hours learning something that should be through informal apprenticeship, you would think, because, you know, why should anybody have to spend thousands of dollars?
Well, Nick, if you don't take at least 20 hours, you'll cut someone's head off. This is a dangerous
and
field.
What possible recourse could people have
in a free market with a bad barber?
I'm thinking that the medically assisted sex work, you know, that also, you know, occupational licensing, that's an interesting intersection there as well. But so those topics, I mean, in a way, it's more that the topics are of interest to libertarians, and then you guys can do a kind of fun treatment of it, showing the absurdity of a lot of it.
Yeah, and if I can kind of weigh into the deeper goal of the show, or at least one of them, is that you know, if you're sitting down and you're arguing with someone, it's very unlikely that they're going to come to your position. Whereas if you're making a joke, you're able to kind of, if the person laughs, they're on board with you for whatever you're talking about for the 6 to 8 seconds that the joke lasts. And with a lot of these things, with occupational licensing, with minimum wage, it's not necessarily that I want to convert people to our position. What I want to do is make them aware of our objections to something. And I think the show's very good at that.
Yeah. Go ahead. You were about to mention Stephen Colbert.
I was just
going to
say, Colbert has a quote that, you know, you can't laugh and be afraid at the same time. And sometimes I think, you know, he's not familiar with nervous laughter, but I definitely think there's truth to it, and to some extent, where it's satire is famously called a backdoor into consciousness. And I think that's really true, because it's a way of not immediately showing I'm a part of a different tribe, therefore don't listen to me. It's a way of saying, like, we're both humans here. Let's have a human talk about human things.
So, and then,
list.
Sarah, what are a couple of your favorite episodes?
Well, I have to say, when you first posed the questions, I was thinking of favorite episodes to shoot. And those are a little bit different. I have to say, we filmed an episode. This was actually between when we were between studios. So we were filming out of my apartment, which is, as Heaton knows, pretty much a sauna. After we've been shooting for about an hour.
Terrible. It's why if you look at the pre-reason videos, I usually look damp. Yeah. And that's part of the reason.
And you hear me blowing off of screen, just going. we filmed an episode about train subsidies called Trains with Multiple A's. That's probably one of my favorite episodes we've ever shot. It was very humble means at that point. We actually didn't even have a teleprompter back
then.
I had to memorize the lines. It was terrible.
No, not only did he have to memorize lines, I tried mouthing the words to him, which, by the way, Heaton pointed out, made me look like a deaf girl.
What was the point about the trains episode?
Then there's the actual point of the episode. The point of the episode was that we have terrible trains in America, which I didn't realize until I took a trip to France and saw that the trains were much, much faster, much cleaner, much more frequent, and much more efficient. And I looked into it, and this is also one of those nonpartisan issues. We have terrible, objectively horrible trains in this country because of a lot of stupid reasons, including artificial speed limits on trains. And also a restricted railroad network that are all artificially restricted by the government and have real tangible real-world effects. And so that was probably one of my favorite episodes. But I would say by far my favorite content episode would be Why the Lights Are Still Off in Puerto Rico. Because as a libertarian, we often talk about the detrimental effects of massive taxation and making utilities public can sort of endanger their quality. Nowhere was that more apparent in Puerto Rico when the hurricane hit, where, you know, you're actually seeing lives being lost because of really poorly enacted public policy.
Yeah, and the lights are still off there and to a great degree, right? I mean, it's just a very slow moving recovery.
So, and unfortunately, none of the poor Puerto Ricans can be cheered up by our hilarious episode.
That's ironic because laughter after penicillin, antibiotics and open heart surgery really is the best medicine. Yeah, so, that's a good example of an episode where if people are not familiar with Mostly Weekly, one of the things that's great about it is that it's so information rich and then it's entertaining at the same time, and it's wonderful to see that. Andrew, where did you come from in terms of, talk a little bit about your career path that led you to, you're on staff at Reason, Sarah's a freelancer, yep. How did you end up, what's your background?
Let's see. So I, most recently, I worked for Congress for a year, and I was doing comedy at night in Washington, D.C. I apologize to listeners.
But you were doing explicit comedy at night.
I was doing explicit. Yeah. I was doing stand-up.
You were making jokes all during the day, right? You were, but...
As opposed to what he does now, which is suggested implicit comedy.
That's right. Right. Yes, exactly. It's sidestep comedy. But I was doing both. Yeah. I went to Edinburgh to get a master's in international politics. I thought I was going to come back and become a bureaucrat, basically. And I was doing stand-up, and I had kind of an epiphanal moment reading Parliament of Whores by P.J. O'Rourke, where I went, oh, I could actually combine my interest in
– I'm
a whore.
I should join Parliament.
I've been to Parliament, and I went, oh, I could combine humor and comedy. And I ended up I moved to New York to pursue comedy. I worked as a writer on The Independence that Matt Welch was on, that listeners will be familiar with, and with Kennedy. While I was doing that, came into contact with Austin and Meredith Bragg, mm-hmm. who produce
Reason
mostly
TV,
weekly now,
yep.
of mm-hmm. Reason TV, and they're very talented. They're terrible human beings. I don't like them at all.
But we really hate them.
That's the cost of doing business with them.
No,
not at all.
They're very, very talented.
They're like Harvey Weinstein without the charm, to be quite honest.
I was wondering why he was inviting me up to his hotel room so much.
Well, you're welcome, fellas. So they yeah. brought me in to do originally Libertarian Star Wars, and it went really well. It was a lot of fun to make. It was really yeah. funny. We redid that with Libertarian Star Trek, and then eventually I got brought on to work at Reason, which is fantastic because I get to be funny and I get to indulge my wonky political interests.
Great. And Sarah, what about you? What's your capsule biography?
So
Capsule
I see. Okay. I hail from the libertarian paradise of Berkeley, California, where I kind of developed a defensive mechanism, like an animal in the wild, of being funny to deflect tension when people sense that I'm not of their political tribe.
Does this mean that if I argue with you, you'll get funnier?
It's true, actually. it's sort of perverse humor. So then I moved to Cambridge, Massachusetts, and finally New York City. So both very welcoming places for non-liberals. And I kept working in comedy, and I worked for a comedy theater, and I currently work for a comedy show on National Geographic.
Yeah, this is not. Yeah, I was going to say this is not a 1970s era game show. So you can name your employer. Would you please?
I see. Okay, I work for Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he has a show called Star Talk on National Geographic, and I love writing for it. And I always kind of figured like I would love to be able to combine sort of my political leanings with my penchant for writing comedy. And that's kind of when I ran into the Bragg brothers, who are really just tremendous people, I have to say. And they kind of... they brought over Mostly Weekly to Reason, and it's been a very happy marriage ever since.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, then let me ask, where do you guys go next, or what are some of the topics or ideas that you have in development that people who would be looking at Mostly Weekly can look forward to?
We've got coming up defense spending, which I think is a very libertarian topic.
You know, I'm laughing already.
Yeah,
it's you know, bombs. A lot of Arab wedding jokes, I assume, in that.
I will be wearing costumes the entire time, but a lot of them are Native American costumes. I don't know why we're doing that, but we're planning to culturally appropriate as much as we can.
No, so defense spending.
Isabel will repost our articles. We should have you in a Native American headdress in every single episode.
Have a direct pipeline to Jezebel or whatever.
Yeah, that will expand.
So, your defense spending piece, though, that sounds like it's really in the sweet spot of a topic that, you know, is ripe for satire and parody and just actual anger. We seem to be spending more and more, and it's not exactly clear what kind of value we're getting out of any of that. But it appeals to a wide part of the political spectrum for sure.
Yeah, I think that is a kind of red meat libertarian issue, and it's also one that there's this sort of presumed alliance between Republicans and libertarians, which I don't really buy into. But that's certainly an issue where it's somehow completely invisible to Republicans. If you attach a tank to it, the math no longer affects the budget, and so we'll tackle that, which will be a lot of.
Yeah, so if instead of giving out Obama phones, if Obama had been giving out Obama tanks, nobody would have had an issue at all.
They would have considered it investment in infrastructure. Yeah.
Yeah. That's stimulus spending. Yeah. The you know, people just need their own F-35s. What else do you got cooking?
We also have another episode coming out that I'm excited about called 10 Non-Pedophile Reasons Roy Moore Sucks. Which I think it pretty much speaks for itself.
But I have to ask, only 10?
Only 10
we still have a paucity of time. Yeah, we can't do it. If you want us, we can do an hour long session.
Yeah, we're open to doing that. We can't do an hour long video. Some guy in a leather jacket.
Yeah, that's that could be like epic sax. The video you could be doing like 12 or 24 hours of that, I suspect.
I have a video in the tank called Putting de Blasio on Blast that I feel like would just be an airing of grievances for hours. Yeah. But we also have episodes.
Well,
that
we are coming up to the Festivus season, so maybe we can have an airing of grievances. But
I we have a couple of episodes that we research over a longer amount of time that I'm sort of excited to release. I'm working on one called Ghost Crime, which has to do with people who get incarcerated for crimes that then get legalized, but they're still serving their prison sentence.
Wow. So this is like pot dealing or something like that.
Exactly.
In states where it's legal.
Huge.
Yeah.
And so if any listeners to this podcast have any tips about it, because it's very much breaking new ground, please send me any information.
I hate to say it, and obviously I try not to interfere with the funny business, but I'm sensing if Andrew Heaton is not dressed like Fred from Scooby-Doo when you're talking about ghost crimes, I think you're missing a real opportunity there.
All of the notes we get from you, Nick, are just like, make it darker and more offensive to people.
I'm just happy that he didn't cast me as Shaggy. I'm really
Shaggy.
Pleased that I'm the Fred in this scenario. That's terrific.
Oh, yeah. Now, Fred, Fred set the fashion. I mean, who didn't dress like Fred for the entire 70s and a good chunk of the 80s?
Criminal justice reform, that's a big one. We talked about that. Sarah's really keen on ghost crimes. I'm big on criminal justice reform in general. Personally, that's a really big issue to me. And it is a bigger one in terms of research, but we'll have some fairly in-depth shows coming up.
Oh, that sounds great. We are going to leave it there, but I want to thank Andrew Heaton and Sarah Rose Siskin, the people behind Reason TV's popular ongoing series, Mostly Weekly, which is a libertarian response to shows like The Daily Show or Last Week with John Oliver. Andrew, Sarah, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks. Good to be on.
This has been the Reason Podcast. Thanks for listening, and please subscribe at iTunes and rate and review us while you're there. This is also Reason's annual Webathon Week, where we're asking people who like what we're doing to help support us with fully tax-deductible donations. You can give money to Reason, it stays away from the government, and it helps us out. If you're interested in that, get more information at reason.com/donate.